sick of listening to your shit. Shut the fuck up.
If you're a heckler, shut up. If you're a hater, shut up. If you ain't holding the mic, then shut the fuck up. Fuck boy, shut up. Fake friends, shut up. If you ain't about growth, then shut the fuck up. Negrophobic, shut up. All lives matter, shut up. White man with a forked tongue, shut the fuck up. Victim blamer, shut up. Uncaring, shut up. If you're worthy to our benefit, shut the fuck up. Liar, liar, shut up. Wolf crier, shut up. When grown folks are talking young, and shut the fuck up. You a traitor, shut up. Manipulator, shut up. Real friends know the time to shut the fuck up. Wrong preacher, shut up. Wicked preacher, shut up. If you ain't got any answers, hey, shut the fuck up. Interrupter, shut up. Obstructor, shut up. If you ain't holding the peace pipe, shut the fuck up. Hey, 2021.
Shut the fuck up.
That's what's up.
Shut up.
If you know the words, sing along.
Why can't you want me like the other boys do? They stare at me while I stare at you. Why can't I keep you safe as my own? One moment I have you, the next you are gone. Rehearse steps on an empty stage. That boy's got my heart in a silver cage. What? Why can't you want me like the other boys do? They stare at me while I crave you.
All right, stop there. Like, I don't know if I can legally play this song, but I'm going to take a risk on this episode, today's episode. Yes, I'm taking a motherfucking risk because thug life, baby, thug life. You only live once. YOLO, baby. Worst case is they'll do me like SoundCloud and not publish this episode. And I'm just going to have to take it. All right, okay. Let's get our shit together, B Black. I will explain why I played that song at the beginning, at the end. But for now, welcome, bienvenue to another episode of Shut Up Podcast. I am your host, B Black, aka B Blizzak on Twitter, and Mr. ShutUpPodcast.com on the web. Because the internet is large, so I should say the web, the World Wide Web. Okay. FYI, and a reminder for returning listeners that Shut Up Podcast is protected by the red, the black, and the green, and waves a red, black, and a red, blue flag. I'm representing and holding it down for black folks who grew up in the 80s watching TV Ontario, Télé-Québec, and Soul in the City on Much Music. This episode is being recorded on July 24th, 2022. And is brought to you by the letter F. F for fuck Whitey. Fuck Whitey as a staff, record label, and as a motherfucking crew. And if you want to be down with Whitey, then fuck you too. All right, I'm just going to, the format of this episode is going to be a little different. I guess if you're a new listener, it's all going to be the same. But yeah, let me just run through this agenda. Show notes on the website, and let's go through it. I don't know. Like, I gotta, you know, this podcast is just me sharing feelings and thought. That's all I'm doing. That's all I like. That's my dollar in a dream. That's my dollar that I'm offering. And take it or leave it, man. Take it or leave it. All right. Okay. All right. So usually I start with, I mean, everything is thoughts, but I'm just going to start with, you know, my intro when I say fuck Whitey. There was a time where I was starting to feel like, you know what, maybe B Black, you're being too hard on Whitey. Maybe we should cut that out. And then Whitey's gonna have to do some bullshit to remind me why I have to say fuck Whitey, and if you're down with Whitey, then fuck you too. So this week on July 24th, that ends. I don't know. I mean, if you're familiar with,
This week, there was a video going around of a two black children at a Sesame Street parade. I think it's called Sesame Place, but yeah, but whatever. Sesame Street theme parade. And two little black girls, right? And there was these, what do you call that? The mascots, the people in the costumes. And she was dressed like one of the characters from Sesame Street. And you see the mascot high-fiving some, I don't know, some white children, some adult. And then at some point says, nope. Like, I'm not sure if it was saying, hey, not you, or she would say, look, I gotta go, something like that. And the two little black girls are like, you know, trying to get a hug or trying to get some affection, trying to make a connection with this thing, with this fucking puppet. And you can see it. It's like making eye contact with the kids and saying, it's as if she's saying, not you, gotta go, or whatever. But long story short, the kids got snubbed. Now, at first, someone put that on their Instagram, posted on Instagram and just said, hey, man, oh, that's kind of sucks. That what happens to me. Like, you know, as a black person, you're like, they do, you know, you always have a moment when you're like, did that happen? Cause I'm black. You know, no black person wants to be the one who's like, oh, you know, wants to be the stereotype that white people made up, that black people cry racism for anything. It's like, oh shit, the bus came late. Racism. I mean, I do it. I mean, you know, I blame everything on racism. I'm kind of hungry right now. Motherfucking racism. Anyway, yeah. But yeah, so no. So the person who posted the image, the video, just said, hey, some fucked up things happened. And actually, I can't remember what the comment, whatever. But the point is, other parents, other black parents, started posting their images of their kids being snubbed by characters. And it just turned into a big ass conversation. You know, there's been a conversation about what the fuck Sesame Street. But okay, yeah, not the fuck Sesame Street. Look, okay, I have a link in the show notes called title "When Sesame Place is Racist, What is Left?" And yeah, so Sesame Street, you know, the usual white people response to racism. Oh shit, we fucked up, and we'll do better. You know, whatever. But that's not my point about this video. I wanna take a different. Like smarter people have made comments about shared their thoughts about the situation, but I want to make a different take on maybe a slightly different take on what transcribed on those clips. And it's when I saw those videos, my first thought was anger towards the parents. That was my initial thought at the beginning. And then, you know, like, of course I didn't express it, but I remember feeling a sense of anger at the parents for putting their kids in that situation. And then I started to think about how, I can't remember what early memory I had, but some white person did something racist to me. It might have been a white friend. And my mom was like, duh, that's how those people are. I mean, that's what you get for trying to be friends with these people. It's like, she didn't, there wasn't no, poor, no, it's okay, everything's gonna be all right. There was no comforting or anything like that. It was more blaming you for allowing yourself to be in that situation. That's what I remember. And then I remember that, okay, if you've been following along on the podcast, I've been talking a lot about the book, or the TED Talk, and now the book, The Power of Vulnerability by Brené Brown? Fuck, c'était français, c'était plus facile à prononcer. Yeah, Brené Brown. You know, she's from Texas, so must be Brené. I don't know how you fucking Anglophones say it, whatever, right? Anyway, so, yeah, sorry, I've been following along, and that's like, you know, I've been touching on different aspects of the book, because at some point I think I feel like doing a summary of the whole book, but or TED Talk, sorry. But in this particular situation in the book, she talks about how fuck, I should have written that shit down. What's the word, the exact wording she used, something about, here, let me, man, and this is why I'm always have the jitters before a podcast, because I'm always nervous about leaving things out, and this is what I'm leaving out. Okay, so what did she say about, oh god damn it, sorry, she said, oh, these guys won't let me, oh okay, I don't have a notes. Okay, Okay, I'm going to put it in my own words. She was just talking about how a lot of us have stopped being vulnerable. And she talked about a story. She shared a story. This is towards the end of chapter one of her book. And she shared a story about how she came home to her parents, to her mom, and said how, hey, the kids at school are teasing me or wasn't down with me. And her mom, instead of comforting her, was like, told you to wear cuter jeans. I told you to do this. Told you to do that. And all, and whatever. Basically, she got defensive. She like, it's like she blamed her for the situation, you know. And, you know, it's shit like that that makes a child or a child grow up into someone who's like, man, fuck vulnerability. Fuck the people. This world is an ugly place. Anyway, the connection I'm making is, I guess the point she was making with that story is, it's not that she was faulting her mom, because she was saying how, oh, I think she was also saying that she was guilty of doing the same thing with her daughter. Whatever. But the point is, the reason her mother did that is because it was a self-defense thing. Because the other alternative is for her to show empathy to her kids. But, you know, empathy is weakness in this cruel world. Who, you know, your empathy, you're going to get your ass kicked in this world, man. If you show any weakness, you got to be rough. You got to be tough. You got to, you know, these wolves out there will eat you up. And I guess it just had me thinking about how my parents have never been the type to show vulnerability to their kids. It's rare. Anger maybe, but not vulnerability like, hey, I'm scared. Actually, the one time have shown some kind of vulnerability. Like, you know, I don't know if they would disagree with this conversation. But yeah, I remember I was going through this heartbreak. Yes, I remember. I was going through a heartbreak. Basically, some girl just dumped me. But it was like serious enough. The situation was, I didn't tell them, but the situation was serious enough for them to find out about it. And I remember talking to my dad and saying, yeah, I know I'm being a little bitch. Okay, I'm paraphrasing, right? How old was I? 18 years old. And I remember saying, like, yeah, I know I'm being a little bitch about it. And the man stopped me and he said, nah, man, nah, I get it. I've known men who've committed suicide. No, I mean, I've heard stories of men. Some men commit suicide over that kind of shit. It was for the first time I can remember my dad being, nah, it's okay to feel what you're feeling. There's nothing wrong. Like, heartbreak ain't no joke. I don't remember him saying, I've been there, because that's not my type's not, you know, he's not that type. But he just, it was good enough for him to say, yo, no, it's okay to feel what you're feeling. It's fucking normal. I am not dissing you. You got my support. And my mom, she was like very, very sympathetic. Like, she didn't like try to talk prayers or anything like that. She was just like comforting, you know, just brought me food to my room. Cause I remember it was just laying in my room and feeling depressed. And she was just like, hey, you want something to eat, son? Okay, brought me food. And when, you know, took it away and just let me be. It's like she knew I was hurt and needed time to heal. And it was like, like one of the rare moments I can remember my parents, is that the word I'm looking for? Being vulnerable, being empathizing in my situation. I want to use the word vulnerable. But yeah, but when it comes to racism, though, they've always had this, now you got to be tough, this very be tough approach. And what I'm saying is, what I'm getting at is the reason why I was angry at the parents is because it reminded me that, I think a lot of us black folks grow up with the idea that, yo, this world is rough and you got to be tougher. And it's a debate every black parent has with their child is, how long do I allow this child to be a child and then bring them up to speed on the reality of racism, of where they stand in this world? And sometimes sometimes moments like these, like, you know, like trying to imagine being a child and you're hurt that your favorite character doesn't want to hug you back. And some parents, I guess, would... hold on, let me go to my notes here because I'm over the place here, and I know I'm rambling on because I. Whew, it's one of the situations that made me emotional, and my immediate response was anger. And it's just like, I know I said I was, the feeling was angry towards the parents, but reality is I admire those parents for allowing their kids to be kids. Like, shout out to the parents out there who talked about how, you know, they would have beat the shit out of that character for disrespecting their kids like that. And, you know, because that's a kid should, you know, should be able to have a childhood. I'm getting off. Yeah. Holy shit. Yeah. Sorry. I'm going to share is at the beginning of this episode, I was very stressed about, I was worried that I wasn't going to say, that I was going to forget to say everything that I wanted to say. And wow. And I'm looking at my bullet points and I said everything. I just, it's like, I'm trying to find another way to say the things that I knew what I wanted to say, but yeah, no, overall is I was angry at the parents for trying to give their child, a childhood. And no, but that's what parents do. Like, you know, like for speaking for myself, I've never understood the value of having a childhood. It's funny. Yeah. To my parents, it was, nah, sharing the gospel is the most important thing for this child to have. Fuck that. They need to know about Jesus and how he died on the cross and how he suffered, because later on, you're going to grow up to be a boy who's going to touch himself. Anyway, yeah. Yeah, no, they never understood the value of having, of children having a childhood. And I imagine they never had one too. They never had one themselves. But so, yeah, that's why when people talk about, you know, kids meaning Santa Claus, it never makes sense to me. I'm like, man, fuck, why are you wasting? Like, I actually don't enjoy Christmas. I don't really enjoy Christmas myself because there was never any, like, associate great pleasure in Christmas. No, it was disappointment. My parents didn't understand the concept of Santa Claus. You know, it must have been weird for them having me show up to school. To, yeah, man, this white man, according to the kids at school, this white man is going to come down our chimney, which we don't have, because we live in, you know, in an apartment, and is going to give us presents. And I guess they were like, yeah, shit. Looking forward to see that happen. Anyway, yeah. So, I didn't wake up, like, on Christmas with surprise gifts and things like that. Nah, the only one I think of Christmas is, you know, eating. And if I'm lucky, parents will buy us presents and shit like that. But, Christmas is not, like, I'm just saying the... I guess I not having a childhood because for my parents, they felt like, nah, two things you need to know about is Jesus and these white folks are crazy. Yeah. And how, yeah, yeah. And how you're going to be treated differently in this world because you're black. So Sesame Street. Okay, hold on a second. I'm fucking with the text there. Yeah. So Sesame Street gave an initial response, responded to the incident. And, you know, it's the usual, you know. Oh, sorry. There was two responses by Sesame Street. The first one was, hey, actually, you know what? I'll read it. It goes, we sincerely apologize to the family for their experience in our park on Saturday. We know that it's not okay. We are taking actions to do better. We are committed to making things right. We will conduct training for our employees. Oh, no, okay. No, I'm reading the second response by Sesame Street. The first one. It just, the first one was like, hey, look, our puppet fucked up, but, you know, basically they made excuses for the puppets. Like, they couldn't see the kids, has nothing to do with racism. Of course, we know racism is bad and shit like that. But what it made me think about is how white and black parents treat racism differently. See, black parents decide from the get-go, okay, look, I think I'm going to have to tell this kid about racism. It's like, yeah, what happened to you was fucking racist shit. Deal with it. We ain't got it like these white kids. White parents, on the other hand, They're like, you know what? I can't go in. I don't know what it's like to be raised by a white parent, but it was just the reaction by Sesame Street to be like, no, it has nothing to do with racism. Calm down, black people. Racism, you know, racism was a thing in the past, but yeah, we know better and shit like that. Like it's like avoid, deny, and it's deny racism while for black people, black parents have to teach their kids to confront racism. Yeah, I guess that's the only conclusion I'm gonna make about this whole Sesame Street situation. And it's a fucking shame because a lot of us, you know, a lot of us grew up on Sesame Street. Yo, I'm putting in some additional reading for you guys. It's called When Sesame Place is Racist, What's Left? You know, it's how much Sesame Street means to us black kid, or meant to us black kid. Like when I talk about at the beginning of the show that black folks who grew up on TV Ontario and Télé Québec, yeah, man, Sesame Street is the reason why I'm able to speak English. Cause I grew up, I was born in Montreal, and then so my first language French. And I remember a time when the kids made fun of me because I didn't speak English, or I spoke English with an accent. And shout out to Sesame Street because I made it help me pick that shit up like that. Well, Sesame Street was one of the shows that helped me pick it up like that. Another link that I'm putting in the show notes, it's called The Curious Canadian History of Bert and Ernie, The Canadianization of Sesame Street. And it's a podcast episode I listened to a long time ago. And this white dude breaks down how the decisions they made, the process that went through into getting Sesame Street in Canada. And the part that I liked that I liked the most about that explanation is how the decision maker, I don't know if it was CRTC or whoever, the decision makers were a little concerned about how Sesame Street dealt with race, because to them, they were saying, in Canada, we don't have these problems. Like, race is an American thing. In Canada, no, fuck that. Fuck that. I mean, we made sure to get rid of our race thing. Okay, that's not funny. But yeah, man, you know, genocide. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, genocide. And we made sure that every immigrant who's not white, who comes into this country, like, you know, fits in or gets the fuck out. But anyway, it's a fascinating podcast worth listening to. And this is me being nice to a favorite podcast. All right. Okay. All right. Next, another topic on that's been near dear in my heart this week was, I was considering making this the title of this episode, first the Fat Boys Breakup. But everyone, you know, like a lot of people have already made that comparison, and it's in relations to news that hit that the Bodega Boys, a podcast that I used to listen to, broke up. They're no longer together as a duo. Some sad shit. And I don't know. First, I guess I should start out how much I used to enjoy their show. I'm not sure. It reminded me of the feelings that I used to get from listening to hip hop, like New York rap that always gets you strapped. No, how does it say it? Fuck. Sorry, I get performance anxiety every time I try to rehearse a rap verse in front of this microphone. I don't know what that's about. I don't know. But yeah. Yes, I'm in therapy. I'll bring it up with her. Yeah. Anyways. Yeah. So I love the podcast. I love the content. It was two black dudes who you could from the Bronx. And what's funny is, like, yo, I related so much to those characters. One of them was Jamaican. The other guy was from Dominican Republic. And shout out to, that's Kid Miro, who was from Dominican Republic. And the Jamaican guy was from, it's called Jesus. And it's like I so connected to their content. They were funny. We shared our history growing up as kids of immigrant parents. But except they were from New York, and oh my God, the part that impressed me the most is their knowledge of hip hop. See, amongst my friend, I used to be the guy who, like, boom, spits out verses, rap verses, or makes some kind of hip-hop references, reference to something going on in the moment. But these guys, holy shit. I thought I was good, but these motherfuckers, wow. Wow. Yo, their podcast was so good. Just like Combat Jack, it was a podcast I was like, oh, man, I want to be them. I want to be not like them. I want to beat them. And it was long story short, this week we learned that they've broken up. I should mention that in addition to the podcast that they had, it's they had a TV show called Showtime. And the thing about their TV show is us as fans is they did it in a way where you were like rooting for their success. It wasn't just their content that was great. It's like they were likable dudes that you were just, every time they won, you felt you won with them. And then I mentioned they were fucking funny. And I guess what that I put is that how dope was the podcast and how dope was their duo. See, the thing is, the way they bounced off each other for me was amazing. Like, there's one thing to have talent. You know, you can look at an individual and you admire for their talent. Like, I can listen to a Drake verse or a Jay-Z verse and be like, damn, you know, the talent of the constructions of words. But one thing that I loved about those two was their duo, their chemistry. That's what, for me, made them amazing. I used to love how one guy would set it up and the other, you know, would just boom, like set up the subject and they would just add to it. And I love the respect on air that they had as camaraderie. Like, I guess I'm used to relationships or being with a so-called friend. And on the last episode, I talked about how I'm used to being misunderstood. And I guess I could have added that, you know, it's not being misunderstood that bothered me, or being misunderstood is like part of life, is how that person reacts to that misunderstanding that meant a lot. And what I like about those two is one guy might say something really crazy and the other person would either ask him to clarify or build on it or build on what they were saying. Like, it was always funny. And there was never dismiss them for, oh, fuck, someone doesn't know the alphabet, or some, you know, like dismiss what they were saying. Some people find it funny to someone says something that doesn't make sense and they just accuse the other person of being like stupid. And I get it's a joke, but the thing is, like, for me, it's a lazy joke. Or I've heard it so many times and it was just, and the only person who finds it funny is the person who made the joke. Like, yeah, I guess I just loved how the way they would work with each other, and one presents something and the other builds on it. And it was always constant building, as opposed to, oh, that's a stupid thing to say, or that's a stupid drawing. How am I going to work? It's kind of like an improv. Yeah. It's like they were like the best improv team. Duo. And in improv, there's a rule where, is it you're not allowed to say no, never say no, or something like that? Yeah, to me, dissing the other person because they made something to you that sounds stupid. Like, I'm not talking about, like, you know, oh, Hitler was a great guy. No, I mean, like, ridiculing the other person because, I don't know, whatever. I guess it's in some people's genes. Like, it's just, it's a go-to mechanism for some people. But for me, it's just like, yeah, anyways, I just admire the dynamic between these two. So with that said, I guess I should have known. Look, the other thought I had about this breakup is it was just a reminder that relationships aren't easy. See, we always talk about relationship between a man and a woman. Like, the focus in this society, in our society, is always like, cis-hetero relationships. Like, you know, like when you watch movies, it's always, the focus is always on that, on their relationship. When the reality is, any relationship can be difficult. Like, some friendships can be difficult. Like, hold on a second. Good relationship should be easy. Okay, the point is, I admired their relationship, but was completely oblivious that underneath these two were, it was a challenge. Like, I don't know, like, I don't, like, I know they've known each other for a while. I'm thinking about the relationship you have with your coworkers. Like, I've never been in a situation where I enjoyed my job, I enjoyed the people I work with, and I enjoyed the thing that we accomplished. I'm trying to think of a job. No, I don't think I've ever had a job where I was like, yo, you know what do you call that? That robot they landed on Mars? Yo, that was me and my team. Like, I've never had, like, did anything. You know, the closest thing to amazing I've ever done was, like, probably a podcast. Yeah, it was probably the most amazing. Like, there's episode that I've done with a fellow podcaster, and I was like, felt great to have been part of that process. Yeah, I will say this. It's never been a work thing, but it's always been like, oh, I guess there was a comedy show that I put on that I felt proud to be part of. But yeah, okay. But with that comes a cost. Relationship. Getting along. See, this is why I've chosen to do podcasts solo, because relationships aren't easy. like I understand why Pac and Big had a falling out. Because a motherfucker will take you to that limit. And it's not because they're motherfuckers. It's because, look, man, look. We're born into this world, and this society doesn't really train us to get along with others very well. I don't know. I don't think every parent, like, okay, you know what? That's a longer conversation. But in my experience, no one, like, sure, you teach your child to be polite and all that shit. But, like I think about how I grew up in a church and I was raised on the idea that treat others like you want to be treated. I was able to master that. But the part that was left out for me, and if my dad hears this, he'll be like, well, you should have known. But the part that was left out for me, or that I didn't process, is treat yourself well as good as well. See, I treated others better than I was treated. Does that make sense? Yeah. Like Brené Brown's book about the power of vulnerability, she talks about, yo, I feel like I'm talking about that woman like a Muslim, like a member of Nation of Islam talks about Prophet Muhammad. I mean, Elijah Muhammad here. I need to calm. Yeah, I feel like I'm part of a cult here. But anyway, okay, all right, calm the fuck down. This is, I'm working through my own. What's that word? My own malfunctions, whatever. Okay, what was I saying? Yes, I forgot my point. She was talking about vulnerability. Ah, man. In talking about my screw-ups, I ended up missing the point that I was trying to make here. I'm back. Yeah, relationships aren't easy. Man, it's going to kill me. I know I'm going to remember later, and it's going to drive me nuts. By the way, kids, don't smoke weed, man, because then you have moments like these where you're in the middle of making a good, great point, but you forget what the point was. That's why I got a notepad here. Anyway, yeah, okay. So relationships are not easy. Oh, right. She was talking about how there's no sense to being kind to others if you can't be kind to your own self. This is me paraphrasing. Like, I asked the question, can you consider yourself a good person if you're able to be kind, if you're able to be good to everyone except yourself? So that was my problem when it came to relationship, is I didn't even have a healthy relationship with my own self, and I was trying to get in a relationship with others. And yeah, man. I guess I've always was given the idea that, you know, if you serve others, they will serve you back, like trickle down economy. You give to others and they will give back as much as you give to them. And it doesn't work like them, because some people just love to take. Anyways, yeah, off topic. But all this to say, relationships are not easy. I'm heartbroken by their breakup. Like, I understand all those people who were broken up when Tribe Called Quest broke up, when EPMD broke up. Insert your favorite duo, your favorite group. Well, you know, I was going to say New Edition breaking up, but I knew New Edition after they were broken up. So that's the thing with New Edition. When they broke up, they put out fire. Like, they were still making good music as a breakup. But for them, I don't know. Like, I'm wishing them the best. And, like, you know, because they're talented individuals. But what they brought together was amazing. What they brought together, I can't see. I'm trying to imagine a future where them creating an art that was as good, as great as when they were together. This reminds me of one last point that I'm going to make about relationship. It reminded me of this wedding I hosted, whatever. And I won't go into the details, but in preparation for this wedding, I did some research about great couples, and they were talking about the best couples. Now, I am talking about heterosexual relationship, but I mean, the best relationships are the kind, not just that when they're together, they're better together than they are individually, but the best relationships are the kinds that inspires others. See, that was my problem with relationship, is like most of my examples of relationships were from people who them together really weren't very inspiring. But I guess I'm saying, yeah, no, Desus and the Kid Mero together inspired me to be better at podcasting. And I'm just going to end with, it's a shame, but they're human beings and they need to do what's right for themselves. And I'm not talking about, hey, you guys need to get back together or whatever. I'm not that. No, do what y'all need to do. I'm kind of hoping that these guys don't have a fallout. It is what it is. I was going to say, I hope these guys don't have a fallout like Chris Rock and Will Smith. That's not funny, but I'm just saying, like where one's hurt and the other, I just hope the best for the two. That's really what it is. And who knows what the future holds, I guess. Who knows? Yeah. Who knows what the future holds? All right. Where am I in my, Be Black. Yeah. I copied and pasted. All right. The next subject is just more internal thoughts. So I'm going to take a really quick break. It's not really a break, but it's just, I feel the need to share this with you because I tend to get very serious in my thoughts. And this is my attempt to remind y'all that, you know, cause I'm talking about Brené Brown. I talk about people like Brené Brown, and I know you might think that I'm, I don't know what you might think, but this is me trying to remind you that, hey, I'm all about party and bullshit, and this is just a break to remind you that I'm not going to heaven. This is really what it is. I'm not going to heaven. I might say shit that people who try to get to heaven would talk about, but this ain't me. So I will hold on. I'm trying to find, where is it? I want people. Nope. I've been treated. Nope. Celebs invited. Ah, man, I lost it. Oh, hold on a second. Jesus Christ. Yes. All right. Cause I'm too serious. This is me trying to relax on my seriousness here. My gun go pop. You don't want no beef. We caught 'em black and brown.
possession. We catching bodies like Freddy versus Jason. I got bands on top.
Riot.
Get the drop, we gon' shoot your crib up. I don't give a fuck. I just want that nigga dead. He think he hard cause he dropping these songs. I'ma have one of my bitches set him up. I don't give a fuck. I just want that nigga dead and gone.
This was just in my timeline, and this is my way of saying, yeah, this is the kind of shit that makes me laugh. It reminded me of, I have no idea who this artist is. The person who shared this tweet is called someone I follow on Twitter, LakerBoy_sowhat. Should I be? Whatever. Okay, yeah. And it reminded me of another clip that I found on YouTube, or something that I discovered a long time ago. This rap group called The Rascals. And they remix Broken Road.
I wake up and teardrops, uh-huh, they fall down like rain.
Uh-huh.
I put on that old song that we danced to, and then I head back to the trap. It's not much has changed.
Yep.
I've been hurt and fucked up too many years ago. Hoping I could come up quick along the broken road. Well, I hustled and found a plug from the extra. Show me love. Now I'm flexing in a wreck. They hating on me too. And every sleepless night, let me to where I am.
Come on.
Bitches that broke my
heart.
They became holes that stand.
Church, stand up.
Show me a better way.
Uh-huh.
Promise I'll quit this game. This much I know it's true. I came up and so could you. And fuck the boys in blue.
Okay, what's up? All right. Yeah, that's a remix of the Broken Road. Broken Road. Dope ass song, you know. I'm big on lyrics. Sorry, yeah, on lyrics, song lyrics, and by discovering this song by the Rascals, RMR by the Rascals, it led me to discovering the song "Broken Road," which is a strong verse. All right, okay, all right, all right, all right, okay. Back to our regular scheduled program. Okay, all right. The shit that I'm talking about is just things that were lingering on my mind this whole week. And so now this is like more personal thought. And someone on Twitter, you know what? His name is Legacy Compass. And he's an interesting follow on Twitter. He like sometimes posts motivational shit and some things to think about. But did I mention his name? Yeah, @Legacy_Compass. And he recently posted a question that had me thinking. He said, if someone is afraid of failure, what can change their mind? Now, Old Testament be black, like the who in charge of the podcast would have just like spit out a whole bunch of theory about on answering that question. What did I write here? I said, I'm checking my name. Well, theorize. Like, I'm giving you time to reflect on that question here. Is how would you convince someone who is afraid of failure, how would you try to change their mind? And I responded with, for me at the moment, basically, I don't have an answer to that question at the moment, because this version of Be Black who you're talking to is like being bullied by the fear of failure. But what I like about this moment is I believe It's kind of, it's not usually, it's not often that I admit a positive thought, but I'm going to try to do it right now. Is I actually believe that I'm in a phase in my life where I'm allowing the fear of failure to bully me. But at the end of this tunnel, I'll be in a situation where I can better explain, where I could better change someone's mind about the fear of failure. But right now, the fear of failure, I can make a whole podcast about how you should bow down and worship the fear, that motherfucking fear. Like right now, if you're familiar with the show, the Walking Dead, season 6, maybe whatever, right? The fear of failure is like Negan, and he just bashed the head of two of my closest friends and associate in front of my eyes and basically told me, stay down. And everything in me is just like telling me, don't fuck around, man. I don't want to see that shit happen. He's already killed two of my friends. Like right now, the fear of failure is a real thing for me. And I wrote down, okay, so this was my response to this guy. Because look, you know, his question just made me do a lot of thinking. I said, for me at the moment, therapy. Like if anyone is dealing with the fear of failure, I would tell them, get a therapist. Because I'm not the one to get the answer to. And I added, I used to read self-help books and motivational quotes for inspiration to succeed. Then one day, life hit me so hard that all that theory on not letting failure get you down went out the window. All this to say, once I figure it out, I'll let you know. Okay, I guess what I was trying to say is there was a time where I remember reading all books about being successful, never letting failure get you down. Failure is just a setback. It's just a step back, not a setback, or some shit like that. It's basically the idea is you fail, you come back up. We fall down and we get up. We fall down and we get up. This is like some Donnie McClurkin. Shout out to those who are familiar. We fall down. That's how the song goes. And we get up. Like, I remember that song. I used to sing that song. Like the Holy Spirit within me. But today, the phase that I'm in, I'm stuck at we fall down and shut the fuck up. Stay the fuck down. Like I, the one thing that I will say about this is about this question or the answers as I'm trying to answer this question is it made me realize how I no longer want to be preached to by hypocrites. Like I was that hypocrite. I could have been that guy who could talk to you about, yeah, man, fair is no big thing. Just get back up. And what the fuck do I know about going through a divorce? What the fuck do I know about dealing with bankruptcy? What the fuck do I know about, I don't know, Hillary Clinton losing to motherfucking Donald Trump? Yo, I have this joke or this story that I like to share with people. It usually makes people laugh. It's like, when I was doing comedy, I bombed so bad that I found myself reading a book by Hillary Clinton, What Happened? Cause I remember feeling so bad after that bombing, and I'm like, yeah, well, okay, here's a woman here's a person who's used to or who's known what it's like to face defeat, and she wrote a book about it and shit like that. Yeah, like the failure right now, the fear of failure at the moment is doing this podcast, going live with this podcast, broadcasting to the world that I'm podcasting. The fear of failure that I'm dealing with at the moment is getting back into comedy. It's not that I'm scared of bombing at the moment. It's what's stopping me from doing comedy is, I don't know, man. It's like I don't want laughter from white people who have no idea what the fuck my jokes are about. I can't explain it. I don't know. Sometimes I feel like I'm Dave Chappelle in Africa. There's a story that part of what sent them to Africa, you know, beside him trying to preserve his sanity, was you just noticed a white person laughing at the way he said the N-word. I don't know, one of his race jokes, and the way the white person laughed, just like, eh, fuck, dude, that joke was not for you. I don't know, man. I don't know what knocked me down. I can't talk to you about what knocked me down. I just know that I'm in this situation where I'm feeling like the fear of failure is telling me, hey, stay the fuck down or I'm gonna hit you again. And right now I'm like, yeah, okay, no problem. That's where I am in my life right now. Not feeling like getting back up. And I don't want any motherfucking lectures, any fucking conversation with people about, like, usually when you share this story, then, you know, you get someone tell you about, yeah, no, get back up. It's just easy. It's just like that. It's, you know, you're supposed to get back up. Your natural instinct is to get back up. No, I don't want to have that conversation at the moment. I'll get back up when I feel like getting back up. But at the moment, yeah, fuck that, man. Let life pass me by. Who knows? Maybe this, yeah, I'm willing to accept the possibility that I'm going to regret letting life convince me to stay down. Which brings me to the next topic of conversation on next item on my agenda, which is sometime this week. Well, I guess while processing that question, see, here's what happens: is something will happen, and I'll have billion of thoughts go all over the place, and yeah. So as I was thinking about how I've allowing fear, the fear of failure, to stay down, to tell me, to bully me into staying down, I was thinking about how I realized how I'm both an actor, how I'm a spectator to my own life. Yes, I'm an actor in my own life on this stage of life, but I'm also a spectator. See, this whole time I've been thinking about how I wanted this podcast to be a show about my life. Kind of like Seinfeld. A show about nothing, but it's more about my life. I wanted this podcast to be a show about my life. I never factored in that I'm one of the spectators watching this show. And I understand. And like one thing in. Not only am I spectator, is I'm realizing that I've been doing a shitty job rooting for the main character, which is my main self. It's like I'm waiting for everyone else to applaud him, so then I can start applauding him. And I'm realizing that as I'm watching this show, that I need to root. Like, I need to be my own cheerleader. That's what I'm getting at. This is really, yeah. I'm learning how to be my, that's what therapy is all about, by the way, for me in my case, is learning to be my own cheerleader. Like, I'm looking at this, I'm realizing that I'm looking at this character who's allowing himself to let failure bring him down, and meanwhile, the bad guys are out there shooting up the earth. Like, think of, so let's pretend that I'm, okay, if you haven't seen The Matrix, I don't know what the fuck you're listening to this podcast for, because, you know, we can't be friends, but, you know, I got to be able to talk about The Matrix. So I'm pretending like I'm Neo, right? Neo, after he figures out that he's the one that, holy shit, I got powers, man. I can fuck people up. But right now, it's like the mirror Vinci, the like in Matrix 2, he's stuck in that tunnel and he's powerless. I feel like I'm in that phase of the movie, that I'm stuck in this tunnel and a self-pity, having a pity party, or, I don't know. I think the word is get over yourself. Yeah. Where I can't get over myself. Like I'm just stuck in this rut. And meanwhile, the bad guys are like doing bad guys thing. And everyone's waiting for me to like snap the fuck out of it. And boom. And you know, get back into that fight. Yeah, I mean, this is the stage I am in my life right now is I'm just been knocked down, and I'm trying to convince myself to get back up. But at the moment, but in this case, I'm completely forgetting that there's a crowd, there's an audience out there waiting for me, like, get up! Get up! The people need you. Neo, get the fuck out. Snap the fuck out of it. It's like Rocky. Or even better, what's the one that came after Rocky? Damn. You know what? I gotta write these things down. The movie? Okay, I'm not gonna Google it. Yeah, it's gonna come to me later. Anyway, it's like not Rocky after getting his ass fucked up. And he's just shook. Anyway, yeah. I'm realizing that I'm not just the actor in this show. I'm also the spectator. It's like I want to get back up, but I don't want to get back up just for the audience. I want to get back. Wow. Okay. It's a question. It's a catch 22 here. It's like I'm saying that I want to get back up for my own reasons, but I can't even convince myself. Like sometimes, I don't know. I guess I've just gotten so used to being pushed into the pool, into doing things, and then pushed out of the nest and then fucking fly or die kind of being in those situations. But nah, man. Overall, what I'm just trying to say is I'm learning to be patient with myself. And if I do something, it's because I want to. It's not because, you know, I'm trying to bang my audience here. And I guess it's unfortunate. Like, some of you might listen to the show and just lose patience. It's like, yo, man, like, I'm not going to watch 20 episodes of this motherfucker talking about how he's in a rut and he can't get back up. But that might be the reality. That's how this show might go. And in the end, the audience might leave, but I'm the one member of the audience who can't leave. I'm the one who's stuck watching this show. And at some point, I guess I'm going to have to snap out of it and realize that I can't stay like this always. Who knows? Tune in to the next episode where Be Black contemplates suicide. All right, yeah. That was a bad joke. I mean, yeah, it was a... It's, you know, I guess I'm going to watch more TV shows of heroes overcoming until I finally fucking get it. That's what it is. Which finally brings me to the last topic of the show. Oh, not bad, man. Not bad. I thought I was going to go. You know what? Okay, I'm going to... I really didn't know how I was going to present this, but I did know when I first heard this that I was somehow going to make this the title of an episode at some point. So While I Stare at You is from a song by... It's from a song titled Crave You by Flight Facilities featuring Giselle. And Giselle, that's Giselle Rosely? R-O-S-S-E-L-Y. In French, it'd be Rosely. Anyway, I'm going to go with Rosely. It's a dope-ass song. I'm just going to shout out to DJ Ben-Amin. I don't know him personally, but he just had it on one of his mixtape. And I remember him playing it. I'm like, I thought you were a hip hop DJ. Why are you playing this shit for? And the song, look, on the list of songs, on the list of lyrics that I would like go on my top 10 list, this is one of them. And I'm buying time because I'm trying to remember what I'm trying to say about this song. Let me go to my notes here. Okay, all right. Okay. So, oh, right. So at the beginning of this episode, I played the song that was I played the song, and the part that, you know what, let me read the lyrics so I can situate myself of what I'm trying to say about this beautiful lyrics to the song. It's a simple song, the lyrics are simple, but it, you know, simple ain't it, but quite clever. It goes, the chorus is, why can't you want me like the other boys do? Okay, I'm not going to sing those. Why can't you want me like the other boys do? They stare at me while I stare at you. Why can't I keep you safe as my own? One moment I have you, the next you are gone. Rehearse step on an empty stage. That Boy's Got My Heart in a Silver Cage. Why Can't You Want Me Like the Other Boys Do? They Stare at Me While I Crave You. Anyway, yeah. So the first time I heard this song, it was, you know, I remember thinking that it was just a song about a woman feeling herself. You know, it's like, yo, I'm a bad bitch, and why the fuck everyone else is looking at me, why the fuck aren't you? You know, the verse one of the song goes, I walked into a room dripping in gold. Yeah, dripping in gold. Yeah, I walked into a room dripping in gold. I walked to a room dripping in gold. She repeats it. A wave of heads did turn, so I've been told. My heart broke when I saw you kept your gaze controlled. I cannot resolve. Why can't you want me like the other boys do? Yeah, to me, it was just at the beginning was just a song about a woman who was feeling herself. Then I had a second thought, and I'm like, I the more I just got into the song, I kept wishing that it then became a song where I wish it was a song about a woman who was feeling herself and talking about me. Like, there is something about having a woman that all the boys want, and she's choosing you. So there was a point where I was wishing I could be one of those guys who can have the girl that everybody desires. You know, imagine that. See, the thing is, I grew up with this notion that women, well, pretty women, were like kingmakers. So, you know, a woman like I'm gonna say some incel-ish shit at the moment, right? This is like teenage boys thinking that I'm about to describe here is, yeah, so women made themselves out to make themselves pretty so that they can go to a club and turn us into kings. You know, like, you know, they spot you. And you know all those songs, those R&B songs about how you walked in, how the guy walks in with his friends and he noticed that girl that everyone else is noticing and he gets the girl. Like, you know, in the movies. Like, I was watching The Gangs of New York. And the character, what's her name again? Shit. The girl interest, the female interest of the movie gets with Leonardo DiCaprio. And it just reminded me of the idea of, it just, how I grew up on these movies, and it reinforced the idea that pretty women were kingmakers. So that's why it made rejection so, like, this is why it made, like, rejection so difficult. Like you wanted to approach, you know, you would see a fine girl, you would see a pretty girl, and your desire is to approach her, but all you can think about, or a guy like me would think about, is how can I control the situation so she'll look at me favorably? So that's what made rejection so difficult. That's why when people would say shit like, yo, just go talk to her, you know? Just be yourself. I'm like, yeah, but I have a desired outcome. I want this person to look at me favorably. So that's why, you know, you'd lie. You know what I mean? Like, hey, yeah, that car, that's not my parents' car. That's my car. yeah, that rental. No, that's mine. You know, whatever. Wear jewelry, wear nice clothes, like be seen, we're all the cool people and shit like that. Like, do all those kind of things to make this woman believe that you were worth giving a damn. Yeah, I guess, okay, no, I'm not off top, I'm going on a tangent, just to say that I remember hearing that song and wishing I was the guy she was talking about. Now, here's the plot twist. Here's the motherfucking plot twist. The problem, though, is how in the current state that I was in, full of insecurities and all that shit, I couldn't be that woman. I couldn't be that guy. Like, if I the current state that I'm in, if I meet a woman and everything goes well, my mind goes into disaster. Like, I'm feeling imposter syndrome. My mind is like, hey, what the fuck's wrong with this chick? For her to like me, something must be wrong. Or the shoe's about to drop. Something is up. So even if I had a magic genie and I was able to convince the prettiest woman in the club to look at me, to look at me, to desire me the same way all the boys are desiring her, I would be, something's wrong with this situation. Like, if I was able to create that situation, I'd be insecure as fuck. I wouldn't be able to process that situation. There's no win in this kind of this story. Like, look, I'm describing you a situation. Yeah, I know that doesn't make sense. On one end, I want to be the attractive guy, but on the other end, I don't want to be the attractive guy. Yes, I did mention that I am in therapy and talking to therapists about this shit, but I don't know. I believe that someone out there is able to understand, some guy out there is able to understand what exactly I'm talking about. Now, I initially told you how the first time I heard this song, I thought it was a woman who was feeling herself. Then I described how it became a song that I wish I was the guy this woman feeling herself was talking about. And now, and again, this is all how I'm choosing to interpret the song. I'm sure the songwriter had their own, I might be off or whatever, right? But this is just me enjoying the song so much that I allowed my thoughts to go all kinds of directions. So the third thing, and this was recently, and it ties up to me being a spectator of my own show. Then it hit me how this song, how that song, like the became a personification of my own podcast, of my own self. Meaning, my podcast is the one singing the song, and singing the chorus, repeating the chorus. Why can't you, be black, want me like the other boys do? They stare at me while I stare at you. See, this podcast, in a way, symbolizes all my talents, all my skills, and every aspect about myself that I take for granted. I'm letting you marinate. I'm taking a pause, letting you marinate. I remember hearing a sermon by T.D. Jake, Pastor T.D. Jake, Bishop T.D. Jakes, where he just talks about, where he says that someone out there is praying to have the problems that you have right now. So for me, the song became a song more about gratefulness. Like, the podcast is the hot chick. And the things that I'm taking for granted, that like I'm thinking about the shit that I'm willing to admit that I love about my own personal podcast. My know-how, my technical abilities. Like, this week, I recently wrote, I'm actually working on a script. I'm getting close to finishing a script that every time I update, that basically when I update my podcast on my live site on shutuppodcast.com, it creates a local copy on my computer at home. I'm tapping myself on the back because I'm getting close to finishing that script. Like, in this script is not, there's I should be grateful for my technical know-how, the money I've invested into this podcast. There's a lot of people doing podcasts with less than what I have. Like, who would look at my budget and be like, fuck, who are like, wish I could be in that situation. The fact that I have the people who I've told about this podcast are like supportive friends. Like, the fact that I know individuals who are rooting for my success. There are people starting podcasts and they're like, fuck that. Holy shit. Hell no. I don't want to hear your podcast. Or fuck you. I hope you fail. Like, who are rooting for my success the same way I was rooting for Bodega Boy's success. Like, it just, the whole song put me in a situation where it reminded me I need to be grateful for, yeah, you may not be Apple's iTunes top 10 podcast. You may not be another black guy who tips. You may not be a Bodega Boys podcast. You may not be a Combat Jack podcast. You may not be Three Guys On. Like, I'm thinking of all my favorite podcasts. You may not be anything like them. But everything I'm not makes me everything I am. Shout out to Kanye West. So yeah, man. Yo, I just this song's been on replay in my head, and every time I'm hearing it is I'm thinking of it. It's not just my podcast. It's the lyrics by Roselli. It's not. She doesn't just symbolize my podcast. It symbolizes everything about me that I take for granted and need to start being more, need to be grateful for, learning to be grateful for. Because I ain't no sucker. I ain't no sucker. Just remember that, B. Just remember that. All right, okay. That's it. That's it. I'm going to end on a church ratchetness. Another reminder that, you know, I have some fucking cool concept on this. You know what? No, I'm going to skip this week's church ratchetness. Okay, all I was gonna say is no. The church ratchetness is the segment of my podcast where I take the time to talk shit about the church because I'm a product of what happens when you force your kids to go to church. Yeah, don't force your kids to go to church because then they'll grow up to be like me and just resentful of the church. So yeah, so today's podcast church ratchetness, which by the way. Some of you are like probably listening to this going, hey, aren't you copying from the black guy who tips sword ratchetness? And I want to say, no, they're talking about swords. I'm talking about church. And they're McDonald's and I'm McDowell's. All right. Okay. Got that out the way. All right. So this week's church ratchetness is my focus is on the January 6th committee hearing where they're, what's the group? Basically talking about how Trump's involvement in the January 6th insurrection. And what I was thinking about is how this whole Trump MAGA movement had me thinking about how I can't tell the difference between Jesus and Trump. And that's not a good thing. I think about how specifically there was this one woman who used to be a Sunday school teacher. And I remember her one day harassing me about getting back into the church or being more, being like as a child, she was just being a more committed Christian, or I can't remember what it was. Man, she was probably criticizing me for listening to hip hop or whatever. Basically, she was criticizing me for not being the kind of Christian she thought I needed to be. And I remember how the conversation ended with her saying, I'll pray for you. And the shit just made me mad. Anyway, yeah, she was just, I can't remember the current, but she was just one of those fucking insecure Christians who needed to like preach to other people about other being Christian. And I remember how that conversation just drove me fucking nuts. She was a Sunday school teacher. And fast forward to Trump winning the election, and she was passing me a flyer, and it was about how Trump's spiritual advisor, I forget, Angela White, something White, whatever, I forget, some crazy Christian who's associated with the MAGA movement, and she was going to speak at her church. And I remember looking at this fucking flyer and telling myself, ain't she the spiritual advisor for Trump? And this chick was getting ready to go on a fucking, what do you call that? Justification. Basically getting ready to spill out some bullshit and basically say, yeah, no, fuck what you believe. Believe what I'm telling you. And it was, I guess that was my final straw with Christianity, that moment. It was like, because I'm looking at how black Christians are surrounding Trump, and I can picture myself being in their church and then telling me how I needed to ignore what mainstream media was saying about this man and how I needed to believe him as much as the same way I need to believe in the church, in their version of Christianity and shit like that. And it's just, I don't know. I guess, yeah, I'm just going to sum up my church ratchetness about how, fuck, Christianity just became a place for suckers. Yeah, man. And Trump just has to figure it out, man. It just drives me nuts how much these white, not just the white, but the evangelicals, these Christians, are standing behind this dude. Like, there's a part in the Bible about how Jesus said that, yeah, man, I'm going to fuck you up if you send people away from me. And yeah, man, the fact that Jesus is not intervening, the fact that Jesus is fucking silent while this motherfucking hoser is like playing these Christian is, yeah. Shout out to West Christians, man. Shout out to, yeah. Shout out to all you ex-Christian. Shut Up Podcast is a friendly podcast, is a home for you and me. All right. Okay. That's it. All right. I'm just 13 minutes over than my budgeted time. I don't feel bad, but I feel like I said everything that I needed to say. As always, this concludes today's episode. Holler at me on Twitter at bblizak. My website is shutuppodcast.com, where you can find my show notes. Email address is shutuppodcast411@gmail.com. And until further notice, use the RSS feed on our website to subscribe to the website. Thank you for listening. And remember, be kind to your favorite podcast.